welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice. We hope that you enjoy the program.
Hello, and welcome to Episode 2 of Global Solutions, the role of occupational health in planning return to work, region by region. I'm Carolyn Knox, and I'm joined by my colleague, Rebecca Marks. We're members of the Ogletree Cross-Border Practice Group. I'm based in San Francisco, and Rebecca is based in Boston. In this episode, we continue the return-to-work topic introduced by Bonnie Puckett in Episode 1. Bonnie introduced us to mobile apps. In this podcast, Rebecca and I will explore other types of return-to-work modalities that will be in play across the EU and Latin America, including the role of occupational medicine in developing return-to-work protocols. With this brave new world of COVID-19 as our backdrop, we will boil down what employers should do and can't do as they plan return-to-work protocols. Perhaps I'm the only one who thinks this, but as I speak to our clients regarding return-to-work issues in various countries, it struck me how different the approaches are in certain respects across the globe. In the U.S., where many corporate headquarters are located, return-to-work plans will be dictated largely by state and local orders and the company's activities. Even for companies in industries requiring frequent interaction with OSHA due to higher risk of job-related injury or death, such as manufacturing, mining, agriculture, or food processing, occupational medicine will not play a major role in developing return-to-work protocols. However, outside the U.S., health and safety regulations and occupational medicine may have a much larger role to play and must be considered by companies as they bring employees, customers, and suppliers back into their workplace outside the U.S. Rebecca, how does the focus on health and safety change outside of the U.S.?
Hi, Carolyn. You're correct that there's a difference between the way this is perceived in the United States and a lot of the rest of the world. In a lot of countries, even employers whose entire workforce is office-based or even maybe home-based and working remotely are subject to health and safety concerns of their employer. Their employer has heightened health and safety obligations towards them, and therefore they also interact with occupational health practitioners as part of their ongoing compliance. In the EU, there are indeed OSHA-like standards and regulations, starting with various EU directives. But where it gets interesting for U.S. employers is how the employer interacts with the occupational health service or doctor on a day-to-day basis, and every country has slightly different rules about this. So we will get to how this impacts return-to-work protocols due to COVID-19. But I just wanted to start with, to give an example of a country like the Netherlands, where there is a lot of interaction between the employer and their occupational health practitioners. In the Netherlands, for a long time now, occupational health services have been provided by very few major organizations who dominate the profession, and very few employers have internal occupational health services, and instead are required by law, well, either if they don't have their own internal services, they're required to contract with an external organization. And those external organizations are called Arbodienst, and the doctor is usually referred to as the Arbo doctor. The most common interaction, and this continues also with the advent of COVID-19, the most common interaction is when an employee goes out sick. When an employee goes out sick in the Netherlands, if they are out for an extended period of time, the employer has to continue paying them, usually up to 70% of their salary or even up to 100% of their salary, depending on contractual and other obligations. And that can go for up to 2 years. So they want to make sure that the employee really is sick, that the employee is encouraged back to work as soon as possible. And that's where the Arbo doctor comes in. They have the employee go to the Arbo doctor, and the Arbo doctor will help them, will help the employer and the employee by coming up with recommendations to get them back to work. the good thing for the employer is that they can contact the ARBO doctor before the employee goes to the doctor in order to be able to explain to the ARBO doctor any relevant information prior to the employee going out sick. So, for example, I've had cases where the employee went out sick after having received a bad performance review, and the employer can tell the ARBO doctor that.
Well, Rebecca, that's really interesting. And I'm sure U.S. employers would love to have an ARBO doctor when they have a circumstance such as you just reviewed. But will the return to work requirements post-COVID-19 change the role of the ARBO doctor in the interaction between the employer and employee? And will even local health and safety regulations in the Netherlands and the rest of the EU come into play?
So that's an interesting question. Because of the emergency aspect of COVID-19, because this came on so suddenly and so severely and affected everything so greatly, people tend to think that this would change radically what employers are required to do, what they're entitled to do, and what the ARBO doctor, for example, in the Netherlands, would do in response. In reality, some changes have happened in that the employer is required to come up with a plan of action for the whole workplace. The role of the ARBO-dienst and the ARBO-doctor has remained very similar, other than the fact that they can help the employer come up with that plan of action for reopening the workplace. And in fact, major ARBO-dienst have come out with guidelines for employers on how to implement a plan of action to allow them to safely return their employees to work. One of the things that employers should know is that temperature taking or COVID testing is generally not allowed across the EU, in that the data protection laws don't allow employers to have that kind of information themselves. But it may be possible in some circumstances to have the occupational health doctor involved so that the employer doesn't hold that information. Generally speaking, it would only really apply to clients and suppliers who come into the workplace who don't have the same rights vis-a-vis the employer as the employee does, or it would have to do with employees who are actually sick as to whether or not they can be tested. At any rate, that's the sort of thing that the occupational health practitioner can be involved in developing those protocols. Mainly, what the ARBO doctor would be concerned with and what the employer would want to consult with the ARBO doctor on is what to do about employees who are sick with COVID-19 and have recuperated and want to come back to work. And so then it would be the same type of protocol as usual, where the employee would go to the doctor and the doctor would be able to provide clearance or guidance to the employer as to how to return the employee safely to work. And the other circumstance would be where the doctor would be involved in determining what to do about employees who are not sick, but potentially in a vulnerable category, so such as a pregnant employee or an employee who has a chronic condition or someone who has a family member at risk. In that case, the ARBO doctor or occupational health doctor in any country can help the employer decide how to help that employee come back safely, or whether they should stay at home and continue working from home if possible, or whether they need to stay at home, even if they can't work, but still with full pay. I wanted to turn to France for a moment, because in France, the government itself has issued many, many guidelines for coming up with return to work plans. And so have the collective bargaining units, such as Santec. A lot of our clients fall under the Santec collective bargaining agreement, and that collective industry organization has come up itself with guidelines on how to return to work. They all recommend that the occupational health service be involved, but the guidelines are unbelievably detailed. If you look at the French government guidelines on returning to work, they have issued many, many what they call COVID-19 return to work kits. And the kits are different depending on which industry you're in, what type of workplace you have, whether they have a separate kits for how to deal with employees who are disabled and how to have them be able to come back safely. In other words, you have to meet all sorts of social distancing requirements. And how do you deal with that when some employees are disabled? In addition, in France, the employers are required to have a risk assessment document. It's called a DUER, or a Document Unique d'Evaluation des Risques, which means a unique evaluation of risks. And it's supposed to be updated every year, or on a periodic basis at any rate. Since the advent of COVID-19, it should be reevaluated and made current to deal with the circumstances of COVID-19. In order to do that, the employer needs to consult with the CSE, which is the new name for the Works Council, and also, where they might be helpful, the Occupational Health Service.
Rebecca, can you tell us whether or not it's a similar situation in the UK? I know that our colleague, Daniela McGuigan, in our London office, has published some blog posts on this same topic.
Daniela has published several blog posts recently on COVID-19 related topics in the UK. So those are available on the Ogletree Deacons website for our listeners. And yes, the UK is very similar to the rest of the EU, where the Occupational Health Service is an independent service, even though it is in-house, but normally it's an outsourced service. And like in the Netherlands, it's ordinarily used in the case of long-term sickness absence. So for example, after 28 days of sickness, employers usually have a sickness absence policy that then make the employer then refers the employee to the occupational health practitioner. And the employer can send, in this case, it's even more formal. They can send an instruction letter to the occupational health practitioner, whether it's a doctor or a nurse, with a series of questions to focus on. For example, with the nature of the absence, what sort of adjustments the occupational health practitioner would recommend, what precipitated the illness, if the employer has some information on that, how to return the employee to work, like a phased return, and or such things as more ergonomic chair or desk, that kind of thing. This letter needs to be objectively written. You have to be careful because these things, of course, can always become evidence in any claims later. So an employer has to know that this is discoverable. Employer should get involved and should advise the occupational health, you know, what the employer's concerns and wishes are in this process. In terms of dealing with return to work in this COVID-19 crisis, normally things would be managed in the same way with occupational health as any other infectious disease, except that there may be more involvement of occupational health if, for example, an employee complains about the measures taken in the workplace or the lack of measures taken in the workplace to make it safe for their return. So that's when occupational health might get involved. In addition, the employers normally have to have an employee nominated at the workplace as the health and safety representative. And HR would liaise with that representative about how to reopen the workplace, special equipment that might be needed. And together, they might also discuss with occupational health to get the guidance how to reopen the office safely or the workplace safely. Again, this is guidance and not a requirement, that the employer should keep in mind that if the occupational health service does provide guidance and the employer fails to implement that guidance, that will be on the record. The main use of occupational health during this is on an individual basis, as it is in the Netherlands, for example, especially for employees who are extra vulnerable. As in almost all the EU, anyone who can still continue to work at home throughout this, there is strong guidance from all governments that they should continue to work at home as much as possible. But in the case where people are being recalled to the workplace and an employee is in that extra vulnerable population, it's possible that the occupational health doctor would advise that they be placed on what's called medical suspension. That's a special category that allows employees to continue to be paid, even though they're not actually sick. However, in the case of the UK, there's still something called the Coronavirus Job Retention Scheme, which allows employers to furlough employees. And in this case, the employer might want to look into whether or not furloughing the employee instead is a better deal, because it would allow the employer, it's generous for the employee and it's better for the employer because of the government support. Just keep in mind that there are end dates on that. It's going to, at the moment, is planned to end in October 2020. So, Carolyn, after going through what's going on in the EU and in the UK, I hear you rattle on all the time about how Latin America is different from the US. So what's going on there with regard to the role of occupational medicine and health and safety in that region?
Well, Rebecca, like the EU, health and safety regulations are a bigger part of the day-to-day operations for employers throughout Latin America. Not only are there national regulations applicable to all employers, but there are often refinements to those regulations in collective bargaining agreements. Some of those bargaining agreements are, of course, mandated by law. Many countries, such as Argentina and Brazil, require pre-hire medical exams and post-termination medical exams to confirm an employee's medical status. Many countries, in particular Brazil, require that a health and safety committee be established and its members elected. Depending on the size and industry sector, the health and safety committee can have significant power within the organization. And an occupational medical specialist must be associated with the company, either on-site or by designation. And similar to the EU, the health and safety requirements apply to remote workers as well. In some countries, an occupational specialist must inspect a remote worker's workspace to confirm it meets ergonomic and health and safety requirements. During COVID-19, however, special regulations were issued in countries such as Brazil that postpones the meeting of this particular requirement as A, there aren't enough ergonomic specialists to do the inspections, and B, this would expose both the employee and the ergonomic specialist to possible exposure to COVID-19. But the requirement hasn't been suspended forever, and so employers will need to arrange to have an occupational specialist inspect work sites once the pandemic period has ended. And as you mentioned for the EU, Rebecca, across Latin America, employers are still encouraged to allow their employees who can to continue to work from home. So as we talk about return to work protocols and the role of occupational medicine in those protocols, these protocols will be implemented slowly as employers start to open the workplace. Let's talk specifically about Brazil. It seems to be a bit of an anomaly as we look at the role of occupational medicine across the world. In Brazil, when you're talking about developing return to work protocols, the occupational physician plays a pivotal role. As a company looks to reopen, the plan to reopen, particularly if it involves temperature checks or other health questionnaires at entries to facilities or offices, social distancing, and other health-related measures, they must be developed by an occupational physician and presented to the Health and Safety Committee for review. The Health and Safety Committee is not required to approve the plan. It just must simply be presented to them for review. But the occupational physician must prepare the plan. If temperature checks or health questionnaires are implemented, it's the physician who oversees this and retains the information. The information is not to be shared with or retained by the employer for privacy reasons. And importantly, the HR department in the U.S. or the local HR department should not prepare the plan, should not conduct the temperature checks, and should not gather health-related information. In Argentina, the federal government has announced many decrees and regulations, but it has not yet announced a decree governing return to work for private employers. It has announced a decree governing return to work for public employees. However, the government for the Buenos Aires region has provided guidance and is requiring that employers develop a hygiene and health in the workplace protocol. The protocol does not require vetting by an occupational physician, but companies are encouraged to utilize the services of an occupational physician when developing or vetting their protocol. Under the protocol, the employer or an appointed individual is responsible for developing and circulating a questionnaire inquiring into employee health and family health status, and may take temperatures of anyone entering the workplace and may retain this health information for the period during which it may be needed. Because the employer in Argentina is required under decree to immediately notify the health authority of any positive case of COVID-19. This is similar to Brazil, which has a new statute which does require immediate notification to the health ministry of active COVID-9 cases in the workplace and also the contagion. In addition, Mexico has issued guidelines similar to those of Buenos Aires, including appointment of a person or committee to be responsible for the employer's compliance with the return to work guidelines issued by the government. Again, an occupational physician is not required to be consulted, but consulting with an occupational physician to be sure that you're meeting the guidelines and the requirements is recommended. In Mexico, as in Argentina, temperatures may be taken at the workplace by a person or a member of the committee that is formed to develop the plan. Similar to Argentina, they must immediately notify the health authority of any positive COVID-19 cases identified in their workforce. Interestingly, the guidelines issued by the Mexican government require submission to the government of a mandatory self-assessment checklist and questionnaire identifying measures adopted only for the essential businesses that have continued to operate throughout the pandemic period. For employers reopening after June 1st, there's no such requirement for filing the protocols with the government for inspection. Rebecca, you raised an interesting issue about personal data and privacy under GDPR in the EU. Most of Latin America has now implemented or is in the course of implementing personal data privacy laws. But with the rapid rise of this pandemic and the requirement for reporting of active cases, personal data privacy seems to be somewhat suspended during this period, certainly with regard to reporting of active cases to the various governments. One thing, though, that I've seen that remains consistent in the United States and certainly throughout the region are the safety measures that are being required and adopted with or without consultation with occupational physicians. In many countries, including Mexico, governments have issued guidelines dictating safety measures to be implemented in all work locations. The requirements, again, similar to the United States, including wearing of facial coverings in the workplace and outside of the workplace, frequent cleaning and sanitizing of the entire workplace, adequate ventilation, which can be a real problem in Latin America, easy access to sinks and soap for frequent hand washing, accessible hand sanitizer, social distancing of distances between 1 meter and 1.5 meters, and that's country specific, placement of protective shields if social distancing is not possible, and a reduced number of persons present at one time in the work location. These are very consistent, U.S. and around the world. So from that perspective, an employer in developing these protocols can rely on a lot of these aspects. The question ends up being, are they required to consult with an occupational physician as they implement this, or is that guidance suggested?
Carolyn, what would you advise our clients to do as they start planning their return to work? I think the points that you're going to give us, if I'm correct, would cover not only in Latin America, but also in probably most of the rest of the world.
Yes. We always like to have takeaways, don't we, Rebecca, when we talk about issues. So I'd say some of the takeaways from our podcast are, don't assume what works in the United States will work outside of the United States. Be culturally and legally sensitive to variations. Review and understand the legal guidance issued by governments where you have operations, at both the national and the local levels. For example, in Brazil, there have been no federal decrees directly on point related to COVID-19, but the major states and some major municipalities have issued their own orders, such as São Paulo and Rio. So pay heed to what those locations are doing prior to developing your return to work plans. And remember to confirm whether the occupational physician leads the charge or whether your local management team or HR can develop and implement your return to work program.
Thanks, Carolyn, for that tour of Latin America and especially for those final few tips that you provided. Well, that wraps up our topic for episode 2 of our Global Solutions series. Next, join Curtis Chow and Jean Kim as they discuss how countries' border restrictions impact expatriate assignments and short-term business trips as travel resumes.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice.